It's time once again to step out, step up, and step into the Coming Out Lounge, a safe space to be you and your truth with Coming Out Coach Rick Clemons. Rick's expertise in the coming out process has helped hundreds of men and women step out of the closet to live authentically as gays and lesbians. Freeing you from the feelings of guilt and shame, Rick's heart-centered approach is loaded with bankable advice and take action tips for living powerfully on the other side of the closet door. Each week, the Coming Out Lounge brings you heartwarming coming out stories, thought-provoking insights, and diverse perspectives for living out and proud. Pull up a chair and spend an inspiring hour in the Coming Out Lounge. Stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your truth. Here's the host of your show, Coming Out Coach Rick Clemons.
And happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy day after Election Day, and good morning, America. I never thought I'd get to say those words, but that's kind of fun. So anyway, here we sit, the day after Election Day, and lots of stuff has happened for everyone across the country. And regardless of how we look at this and regardless of what political views all of you have, I just want to say, let's all band together. Let's be a society. Let's be a country. And let's see what we can do to move things forward as a community and in the best interest of everyone. Now, I have to say, I'm really proud of many things that happened last night. Four states recognized that gays and lesbians do have a right for same-sex marriage. Some of the ballots are still being counted, but in Maryland and Maine, it did pass. Washington is still being counted. And in Minnesota, they didn't allow it, but they definitely put a ban on not discussing it anymore. So it will probably become a ballot measure there. Congratulations to Tammy Baldwin, the first open lesbian to take a Senate seat in Wisconsin. And to two guys, Sean Mackey and Mark Takano. Mark is in my own backyard here in Riverside, California, where we do the show from, both of whom are openly gay. Mark is pretty special in that he's the first openly gay person of color to take a Congress seat. So congrats to everyone. Now, this is not what this show is about, but it does kind of play into the human rights of who we are as a gay and lesbian culture. And today's show is kind of a combination of some shows that I've done in the past, but it's really special to me because one of the things that I know is being a parent is one of the greatest joys in my life. And even though I went through a whole lot of fears and worries about what was going to happen to my own children when they found out I was coming out of the closet, I also knew that come hell or high water, I was going to be the best damn parent I could be through that scenario. And today we're going to look at things from a little bit different perspective. We're going to look at the challenge and the fights that gays and lesbians who've chosen, literally chosen to become parents. And this isn't like someone else that chooses to become a parent in my mind. These are people who are fighting an upward battle, who are same-sex couples that really do want to have a family. And that is a challenge. And to me, these are the people who, when they choose to be a parent, they really know that they are making this choice and they are going to fight the battle to get to have children, whether they do it through surrogacy or adoption. And so today's show is all about that, what the choices are like, what's the challenges we face. And I have my good friend, Elliot Cronenfield, who is a social worker and a therapist who works with individuals coming out of the closet, going through the transitions of marriage, who also works with surrogacy and adoption and many other things. So he is joining us from Boston this morning after the election hubbub is now starting to die down. And I just want to say, welcome, Elliot. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Well, thanks, Rick. I'm really excited to be part of the program today.
I'm really glad to have you because I have been wanting to touch on this subject for a while. You know, it's one thing to come out and be a parent who has biological children, and I've interacted through Family Equality Council and other organizations numerous times with others who are gay parents, but it's a totally different thing when you are the parent who goes through the surrogacy and adoption process. And I'm glad I have someone like you to really talk through this. So why don't you give us a little bit of background about your own part of your life that encompasses being a parent?
Sure. So I've been out for many, many years. And one of the things that I always knew growing up was that I was gay. And the second part was that I always wanted to have children. And it never occurred to me that they couldn't coexist in my life. Yeah. And I never really knew how that would happen or had given it much thought. But it never crossed my mind that one would be a problem for the other. I actually came out more than 25 years ago and had always had a focus on having a family. And I wasn't really sure how that happened or how it could happen or what the options were. And my partner and I had done a tremendous amount of research into the options. And we had looked at domestic adoption, international adoption, gestational surrogacy, co-parenting, foster care, Big Brother. We had looked at really all kinds of ways to bring children into our lives. And ultimately, we had, for a lot of personal reasons, had decided that we were going to go with international adoption. And so we had moved down that route. And it had been, quite frankly, a very arduous and very difficult and very frustrating process at the time. And several agencies wouldn't even talk to us. I would call agencies and I would say, do you work with gay couples? And they would say no. And that would just be the end of the conversation. So I learned to ask a slightly different question. And I realized that what would probably need to happen is that I would need to adopt as a single man. And then living here in Massachusetts, my partner could then do a second parent adoption to make sure that we were both sound and legal parents. So I started calling and saying, do you work with single men? And most adoption agencies would say things such as, well, we'd like to, but it's no. And I didn't lose hope. And I found one adoption agency that said that they actually welcomed the opportunity to work with single men. And they believe that single men could be wonderful parents. I had tried to adopt from Russia and had gone through several attempts, and that had all fallen flat. And I had said to the adoption agency, you know, just be honest with me. Like, let me know when I'm essentially beating my head against the wall.
Right.
And after several attempts, they actually told me that they had believed I had come to the end of the road. Mm-hmm. And so I thanked them. I appreciated all of the efforts that they had put forward. And I moved on to gestational surrogacy. Actually, I'd moved on to traditional surrogacy first. And had gone through a surrogacy agency here in Boston who had started the process of matching us with a traditional surrogate. And just as we were getting matched with a traditional surrogate, the adoption agency called and said, I don't know how you'll feel about this, but we have a high-risk adoption in the country of Moldova. And if you're interested, we're willing to work with you to see if we can make this happen for you. So we put the surrogacy on hold, and I flew to Moldova, which is a small, tiny little country between Ukraine and Romania, just north of the Black Sea. Uh-huh. And I met a 2.5-year-old boy that just stopped me in my tracks, quite frankly. And after two trips and quite an arduous process, I was actually successful in bringing my son home.
Wow.
And it completely changed my life tremendously. Because we had already started the surrogacy and we didn't want our son to be an only child, we went back and we're going to complete the surrogacy. But at that time, many laws and rules and medical protocols and surrogacy had changed. And that forced us to change from traditional surrogacy to gestational surrogacy. And I'll be able to talk about why those changes happened. And we were matched with an amazing donor out of Michigan and a surrogate out of California. And so very, very thankful for both of them. And we were successful on the first transfer. And in 2006, my daughter was born. And so I now have two children, one through adoption, one through gestational surrogacy. I am biologically linked to one of them. My partner is not biologically linked to either of them.
Okay. So we've got a couple of minutes till we're going to go to break. So I know we'll get into this, but I want to, as quickly as you can, what's the difference between gestational and traditional surrogacy?
Well, it's really the biological link, Rick. In traditional surrogacy, the surrogate mother is also the biological mother. So you're doing an insemination or an IUI, an intrauterine, where they will inject the sperm right into her uterus. A gestational surrogacy is where you break the biological tie and you have the egg that comes from a different woman, and you're going through an IVF where you're going to create the embryos outside of the womb and transfer embryos.
Got it. So I know there's probably advantages, disadvantages, and we're going to get into all that as soon as we come back from break. But it sounds like this journey really led you and your partner to a beautiful space. And I know from my own experience being a father and watching this come to fruition in my life, that no matter how you become a parent, you're a parent. And the beauty that brings to you, provided that this is really what you want to be and how you want to be, is it does bring challenges, love, everything you can think of into your life. And so when we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about the differences, the challenges, and then what stepping forward might couples face as they do make the decisions between adoption, surrogacy, gestational surrogacy, and all the different options that are out there. And I know that Elliot works with these sorts of things over and over again. We're getting ready to go to break. We will be right back with the Coming Out Lounge, where we're talking about surrogacy, adoption, and being a gay and lesbian parent.
You've been listening to The Coming Out Lounge, a safe space to be you and your truth with coming out coach Rick Clemens. We'll be right back after these messages.
I look into the window of my mind.
What's ideal for you? Really, what's ideal for you? Being who you are, doing what you love, and getting out and about with friends. What's ideal for you? With your host, Janice Christopher, Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Central here on the Rockstar Radio Network. And it all starts with Janice doing just that. Then being open, curious, authentic, and living her life on a quest to discover everything that could possibly make life ideal. Check out the website, whatsidealforyou.com. Studies have shown that 80% of Americans, and probably everyone else too, dislike their work. 80%. The mission then is to turn that passion statistic around, to show how it is possible to live your passions and make a living, or live your passions so that you'll be able to mush through your job until you can change it and watch life's magic begin to happen. It's What's Ideal for You with your host, Janice Christopher, Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. Central on the Rockstar Radio Network.
Do you ever feel like you're the invisible woman? Too polite to be political, too nice to be real, tame even though you really want to be unleashed, like you're living in a fairy tale without the happy ending? Well, Cinderella has left the ball, and it's time to wake up and break up with our own self-imposed glass slippers and ceilings. Welcome to Le Chic Speak, the polite woman's guide to self-expression, with your host, Jen Duchenne. Le Chic Speak is the Woohoo Radio Network's resident radio show dedicated to helping women turn on their power and turn up the volume of their voices so you can be seen, heard, appreciated, and celebrated. Join us on Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time for your weekly dose of Le Chic Speak with your host, Jen Duchenne, only here on the Woohoo Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Coming Out Lounge with your host, Rick Clemens.
And welcome back, everyone. And we are talking today about gay parenting from a whole other perspective. We're talking about those adoptions, the surrogacy, the different ways that families can come into being. And I think this is really a very topical subject today, given that we just went through an election season where I wouldn't say that family values was at the top of the heap, but it did keep showing up. You know, what does family values look like? What does American family values look like? And without getting into a political foray this morning, I just want to say families are families. And no matter how your family looks, there's love, there's centeredness, there's a place to call home when you realize all it takes to be a family is truly to say we are a family. So I want to get back with my guest, Elliot Cronenfeld, who is, as I said, a social worker and therapist who does a lot of work in this arena. And he just beautifully shared his own story about having adopted and then having a surrogacy as well. And there's got to be some challenges, and I'm going to make a huge assumption, which I don't usually do, but there's got to be some challenges that might come up when you have one child from adoption and another child from surrogacy, like any family that has chosen that adoption versus surrogacy versus biological children. Can you give us some insights there, Elliot?
Sure. And I think that inherently there are some issues related to that just by the mere fact that you have a child who's adopted in knowing their biological roots. And it depends on what type of adoption you do. So for example, if you were to do a domestic adoption, which would be an open adoption these days, and there was some tie to birth family, regardless of what situation that birth family finds itself in, just being able to have the link to birth family is a tremendous psychological gain for the child. In surrogacy, that would be more inherent, and that the parents have a little more control over that, assuming that at least one of them is going to be a biological parent, and there might be either an egg or a sperm donor, in rare cases both, to complete the surrogacy. And you would have some choices to make there. I think that's really the bigger issue. It's not that I am the biological parent of one child and not the biological parent of the other. The bigger issues that come up truly are wanting to know their identity. Right. And when parents choose surrogacy, for example, so that's probably a good place to start, is they have some choices to make when they're choosing an egg donor and or a sperm donor. And I always advocate that they choose a known or identifiable donor rather than an anonymous donor.
And why is that?
Well, and there are three real reasons why, Rick. And I always tell them that the first reason is that if your child was ever in the hospital and the doctor asked you if there was any family medical history of something, you may need to go back and get more information. The second reason is that if anything were to change in your donor's health history, you would want them to reach out and tell you. Most egg donors usually donate between the ages of 21 and 29. Let's say by the time your donor was 42, she didn't realize that she was a carrier for the BRCA2 gene, which is a high risk for breast and cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. And you had a daughter, you would want her to reach out and to tell you that your daughter had a serious health concern.
Sure.
The third reason is really what I think is the more compelling reason, which is your child's psychological health. Children that do not know their biological root can have self-esteem issues, can have identity formation concerns, and being able to identify who they are is critical.
Yeah.
So my daughter is a vivacious, strong-willed, you know, woman who puts her feet on the floor. She knows who she is.
Right.
My son, who is extremely popular, he's a great athlete, he's a great artist, he's great in school. He's quite frankly the kid that I always wanted to be but never was. But the one thing that he struggles with is the one thing that I can't help him with, is he doesn't know his identity. You know, he knows who he is and he knows who his parents are, but not knowing his birth parents is something that I just can't help him with.
Right. And I think that's really critical. And for me, this has become really important to me because my mother was adopted and we don't know anything about her familial background. Now we know everything about obviously her adoptive parents because they were my grandparents and they were the grandparents I grew up with. But now that I'm, you know, in my late 40s and as we do going through different things as my body changes, all we know is about my father's side of the family. So it's kind of that there's a door there that we can't open because we don't have any insight into what historically might have been with my mother's family. So I think this is one of those beautiful things that you've just brought up in the three things that you've shared that, you know, rather than making these rash decisions about why you wouldn't want to know these things, there's actually some very valid reasons. And I think the self-esteem one is huge for anyone, gay, straight, bisexual, whatever. And you know from a very young age that these are the things that can kind of set the tone for the rest of your life. So what are some of the things that you do with your son to really try to help instill this sense of being for him?
Well, when my son came home from Moldova, there were three other families that brought children home. And we stay very, very connected with them. And we do things like celebrate Gotcha Day, which is the day we got him. And we do Moldova family reunions at least once a year where all of those children have grown up together and have stayed very, very connected. And we try to keep the language alive. And we let my son really take the lead on that in his comfort. And for many, many years, he was so clear that he was an American and he wanted to be identified as an American. So we kept as many records as we could. And we let him decide when he was ready for that information. The other thing that I did is from the day I decided I was going to become a parent and start the process of parenting, I journaled. I journaled every day. I journaled everything I had done, every form I filled out, every fee that I paid, every specialist that I talked to, all the way through today. I still continue to journal for both of my children. And the journals have really turned into now what it's like to parent them and who they are becoming as people, why I parent the way I do so that they can have their history. Mm-hmm. I think straight couples, when they have children, those children are born into a ready-made personal history.
Right.
And I just felt it was really important for me to create my children's history so that they would have it. And I wanted to make sure to document everything. And now my children have a series of journals that have given them their background.
And I think that's really cool. I keep journals. I'm not as religious about it as you are, but because I'm a coach, I will probably 2 to 3 times a week and sometimes every day, depending on what's happening. But there'll be something that strikes me in a session that I want to make sure it's kind of a life lesson that I pass on to my daughters. And each year at the holidays, they know one of the things they're going to get is the journal that dad's been writing in throughout the year. And it gives them the time to kind of look over and see what, you know, and things that have happened, you know, like, you know, my daughter being a homecoming princess and, you know, the week that I spent with my oldest daughter looking at colleges, the report card I just got this week on my youngest daughter when she had straight A's, you know, I kind of put these things in there so that there's a piece of time that should anything happen, they at least know somebody was remembering these things going on. Yes, we all have the memory boxes and stuff. That's part of it. But I love the journaling piece because what you've done is you have created the history for them. You have shown your child how much hard work that you have put into being the parent that you could be in the best way possible, even though biologically normal conception stuff didn't necessarily happen from the societal point of view. So when you work with your kids and you're doing all this stuff, how have you been able to navigate the we're gay scenario? What was some of the stuff you did around that?
Well, what's really interesting is I mean, unlike a lot of gay people who have children, we didn't have to come out to our kids.
Right.
This is all they've ever known. This is their family. This is what they were born into. And so there was a greater level of normalcy for it. And I think that when you decide to become an openly gay parent, you cannot be closeted in any way, because children don't know how to lie. We yep, teach yeah. children how to lie. Children don't know how to read social cues, and they are so refreshingly honest, so beautifully aware. And so when people say to them, who's in your family? And they say things like, this is my dad and my dad.
Right.
So it's really wonderful that way.
Well, I think this is a big piece, and it's always something I have advocated, and I have another coming out coach that she's been on my show a couple of times, but as parents, we always advocate, be truthful, be honest, talk to them at their level, and make this as normal as possible. You know, it's your family. You have the right to sit there and make it normal. And when I interact with school things and stuff, you know, I make it pretty normal. You know, this is my partner, or my partner and I did this. I don't make it a huge issue. It just flows off the tongue. And I think this is where the work you're doing with people as they begin to go through this, these are things that I would guess most people don't really think about at the get-go, but they start to show up. So we've got about 30 seconds till we go to break. When we come back, I want to really dig into, you know, how you guide individuals through this. What are some of the tips you give them? What are some of the things you suggest they be prepared for? Because this is just beautiful, rich content that anyone who is considering having children, whether you're gay or lesbian, these are the things you need to know. We'll be right back with the Coming Out Lounge as we talk about gay parenting and bringing beautiful kids into this world.
You've been listening to the Coming Out Lounge, a safe space to be you and your truth with coming out coach Rick Clemons. We'll be right back after these messages.
I look into the window of my mind.
Tune in to the Travel Chick Show with Bonnie Kitohata, Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific here on the Rockstar Radio Network. Bonnie will share with you an hour of travel ideas, experiences, adventures, and tips from her guests. Topics range from local day trips to international excursions, from organized professional vacations to spur-of-the-moment getaways. For fun or business, groups or solo, by bus, car, plane, train, boat, bike, hike, or horse, you'll also hear about travel-related subjects like cultures, travel photography, keepsakes, and more. Whether you love to travel yourself or you enjoy seeing the world vicariously through others, join us and enjoy travel stories from around the U.S. and around the world. For more information on the Travel Chick Show, check out Bonnie's website, thetravelchick.com. Then join us for the show, The Travel Chick Show, live Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, with your host, Bonnie Kitohata, here on the Rockstar Radio Network. Do you feel like when you watch a cooking show or read a food magazine that the recipes are not practical for a busy family? Do you wish you could have a conversation with someone about the best way to get dinner on the table fast after a long day at work? Are you tired of cooking dinner only to have your family turn up their nose at all of your hard work? Do you want to hear more about healthy living and finding more time to find your passion in life? We'll pull up a chair and visit with Heather Tallman, host of Around the Kitchen Sink, Thursday nights at 10 p.m. here on TogiNet Radio. Like many women, finding balance in life and time to take care of yourself is hard to do. Between managing a career and marriage and children and a busy family schedule, it's hard to maintain a sense of self. And Heather shares how she does it. Check out Heather's website, basilmama.com. Join us for food and a whole lot more on Around the Kitchen Sink with your host, Heather Tallman, Thursday nights at 10 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
Welcome back to the Coming Out Lounge with your host, Rick Clemons.
Oh, we got juicy content today. We're talking about gay parenting from the perspective of adoption and surrogacy. We're bringing up some stuff from my own side of the fence on the biological side. And, you know, given the state of affairs, so to speak, right after election, where four states have now pushed forward different means of gay marriage or opposing any kind of ban on same-sex relationships, the face of society is starting to shift, and the conversations that we will be having over the next decade, I think, will be very powerful. And sometimes we go to professionals, you know, both Elliot and I. Elliot, who is my guest today, is a social worker and a therapist. I'm a coach that works with people coming out of the closet. And people come to us to navigate this. But sometimes the piece that we miss is there's lots of little people who actually have the greater wisdom. And they're usually the people that are involved in this adoption surrogacy part of our lives and being children, or they've been in a relationship with a heterosexual mom and dad, and they are caught in the midst of this coming out process. So I know Elliot probably has some wise wisdom from his own children on how they address their family in their own social circles. So why don't we jump right in there, Elliot, with some of your kids' wisdom?
Sure. Well, you know, it's really interesting because I always thought the hard part would be bringing the children home and having the children. And in reality, I think that's all moment in time. And once that's over, it's over. The harder piece, as any parent will tell you, is the day-to-day parenting. And as parents, we all have concerns and worries. We want our children to be safe, and we feel the need to protect them from the big, bad outside world. And as an openly gay dad, I was exceptionally sensitive to what people would say to my children. And one day we were at the park, and my son was probably about 4.5 years old. Obviously, when your father's a therapist and you've been through an experience like this, I would tell my children lots of things. And so, granted, my children, I think, were a little more aware than most children their age, simply because of the journey we had been on. But some child at the park had come up to my son and said, "How come you don't have a mom?" And I immediately felt this need to jump up and protect him and to engage this boy or looking for this kid's parents. And my son just quickly turned around and said, "Of course I have a mom. You can't be alive if you don't have a mom. I have lots of moms.
Right.
I have an earth mom. I have a godmother. I have two grandmothers. I have lots of aunts that act like my mother, but these are my dads."
Mm. That's so powerful.
And it was really powerful.
Yeah. Well, it's genuine and authentic. I mean, and I think sometimes this is where we don't give kids enough credit. You know, I remember, and my kids were very young, as I've shared on this show numerous times. My children were 5 and 18 months old when we went through the coming out process and divorce and everything. And my youngest daughter would have been probably around four. We had her in a Montessori school in Laguna Beach. And by then we had become kind of a beginnings of the modern family. I'd been with my partner a couple of years, and my ex-wife and I were on a place where we could have conversations, and we all went to a performance that she was doing at the school. And of course she wouldn't go up on stage, so I had to kind of intervene and try to make that happen, and it didn't happen, and so on and so forth. But then after all that, we're standing around at the reception and somebody said to her, "Who's that guy?" And meaning my partner. And my youngest one just turned and said, "That's my dad's boyfriend." And it was like, they just kind of looked at each other and they're like, "Okay." And it was like, you just kind of stand there and go, okay, so we make a big deal out of this, but to the kids, again, at their level, they just take it in and absorb, so to speak, until we as adults make it the issue. And I think this is kind of what you're saying is the same sort of thing. So what other kind of wisdom have you seen come from your own kids as you've taken this journey?
Well, I think that the truth is that when I, and obviously the day after the election is such an important time to talk about this, when people talk about marriage or children need a mother and a father. The truth is, I agree. I think they need lots of mothers and lots of fathers. And I think that my children benefit from having multiple people playing those parenting roles. And I think that understanding it does take a village to raise a child, and nobody raises their child in isolation. And I think that the wisdom that my children have shown me is that I shouldn't be so full of myself to think that I am wholly responsible for raising these children. And that while I do believe that love and security is what makes a good parent, no parent raises their child on their own. No couple raises their child on their own.
Absolutely. And I think this is that key element. When we feel that we do this all by ourselves, then the child truly becomes another piece of some materialistic thing that we own, we control. You know, I love going to back to school nights. I love meeting my kids' teachers, and I love having dialogue with them because they are another formation of who my child is. And I love that you say kids need lots of moms and lots of dads, and because they do. If this was not a village, as you said, I don't know what my child would be like. And if you really go back to the tribal cultures, you know, that still exist even today, but when you look at the historical perspectives of how were people socialized, it's always been this village mentality. It is everyone takes care of everyone to ensure that the tribe prospers and that the tribe survives. And somewhere along the way, I think because of who we are as a society, we began to lose a little bit of that insight. And I remember when we had a nanny for a while, I had friends who actually looked down on me for that. And I thought, you know what? My kids are with a beautiful person who speaks another language, makes them unique, interesting meals, cares for them as much as I would, gives me and my wife the ability to sustain an income that we needed to for our lifestyle, as well as give us the stress-free living when we come home to actually truly be with our child. So I think these are just really powerful things to look at. So as you work with your different clients, I know you work with lots of different clients, what are some of the biggest challenges, let's start with kind of the gay couples, face when they start having these discussions about let's be dads or let's be moms? What are some of the big issues they face?
Well, I think first of all is really spending some time thinking about whatever internalized homophobia you have and how out are you really. It's one thing to say that you're out and you've got an income and you can afford to have children, which I think is wonderful. But when you come out and, you know, you can come out to your family, but your family can love you and accept you for who you are, and they may choose not to tell anybody, which is fine. You know, that is certainly their right and how they decide to cope and manage with your status of being a gay or lesbian person. But when you have children, you actually also not only force yourself out in every possible situation, but you also force your family out in every situation. Because when your mother shows a picture of her new grandchild and they say, oh, look, my son just had a baby. Oh, I didn't know he was married. What's his wife's name? So being able to work on your village before you go ahead and spring it on them that it's a done deal. I think taking time to consider really the strengths of the people in your support network and how you will explain your family in a larger sense. I think this also leads to some of the other wisdom that my daughter gave me. When we first showed up for the first day of kindergarten, because we were the first gay male couple in the school, everyone had heard about us and was expecting us. In the hopes of being accepting, they actually went so far to the other end that they had ostracized us because everyone knew who we were, knew us by name, and we didn't know anybody. And so it really had this really weird shift in dynamic. Mm. Everyone trying to understand what it means to have a gay family in the community. Right. And so being able to, for me, to understand what that means and how to explain it to them to help them normalize their experience are the things you need to think about and consider before you even start thinking about how to have a baby?
Well, and I think this is just an extension of the overall coming out process. I had a very unique situation this morning when I was at the gym, in that I ran into a guy that I knew but hadn't seen in a long time. And so we're chit-chatting and talking and everything, and we're in the locker room, and he asked what's been going on. And as most of the listeners know, I was on the Ricky Lake show last week. And so I was sharing that experience with him. And so he's talking and he's like, "So what specifically did you get pulled on to the show for?" And he knew I was gay, but I'm standing there in a locker room with a bunch of guys, some of them in different states of dress, going, "Okay, how am I going to actually say this? And what am I going to say?" And I said, I just thought, you know what? I don't know most of these guys from anybody, so I'm going to normalize this as much as possible. I said, it was a show about people coming out of the closet and living their truth. And they thought that I would be the best person to pull onto the show because I'm the coming out coach. And it went really well. So once again, I had to come out, but it's that moment of how do you start to normalize everything? And I think this is a key piece of when you start considering being a parent, is how do you normalize the experience for yourself? How do you normalize, as you so beautifully said, the experience for others? And we're going to go to break here in about a minute, but I think this would be a beautiful place to come back and pick up where we were talking about how do you begin to get into this normal space of A, accepting your own homophobic feelings that may still exist, normalizing your own relationships, normalizing your interactions with family, with society, because once you have a kid, you never stop coming out. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I've learned in the 18 years that I've been a parent, is I will never stop coming out as long as I have my children in my life. So when we come back, we will pick right up here. We will continue the discussion with my good friend Elliot and talk about these normalcies and these challenges that we all face as parents, but especially parents who are choosing to have children through surrogacy and adoption. We'll be right back right after the break.
You've been listening to The Coming Out Lounge, a safe space to be you and your truth with coming out coach Rick Clements. We'll be right back after these messages.
I look into the window of my mind.
Attention parents and teachers. Here is a series of alarming yet true facts about the current state of teaching reading in the United States. The federal government has spent close to $500 billion to improve reading ability, and yet we still have over 8 million students who cannot read on grade level. 440,000 students who have a total reading vocabulary of 50 words or less, and a national dropout rate of one new student every 26 seconds. Sadly, one of these could be yours. Fortunately, it's not too late to help. Introducing The Reading Show with Dr. Joe. A fast-paced, highly informative, easy-to-listen-to show led by nationally recognized reading authority, Dr. Joe Lakovich. For more on Joe on the show, check out his website, failurefreeonline.com. Listen in this week to learn amazingly simple ways to turn this problem around. The Reading Show with Dr. Joe, with your host, Dr. Joe Lakovich, Fridays at 10 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
It's time to capture the simple piece of the Amish in your own life. Amish Wisdom with Suzanne Woods Fisher, Thursday afternoons at 5, 4 Central. Each week, Suzanne will have conversations with guests about living a life that incorporates principles of the Amish without going Amish. She'll cover the practical, simplicity, slowing down, reducing clutter, putting the brakes on materialism, the historical, how have the Amish survived for 400 years, how can we hold on to what we hold dear, and the spiritual, treasuring important values, honoring the past, and increasing peace of mind. You don't have to become Amish to make personal peace a reality. Amish Wisdom will help all of us live a simpler life. For more information, go to SuzanneWoodsFisher.com. With Amish Wisdom, Suzanne offers us a glimpse into a world of peace, serenity, and total commitment to family and God. This show just might change the way you live your life. It's Amish Wisdom with Suzanne Woods Fisher. Thursday afternoons at 5, 4 Central on TogiNet.com.
Welcome back to the Coming Out Lounge with your host, Rick Clements.
And we are back going into our final segment, talking with my good friend Elliot Cronenfield, who is a social worker and therapist, that part of his specialties are working with individuals, gays and lesbians, who are considering starting families through surrogacy and adoption. So, Elliot, to get people in the know of how they could work with you, why don't you just kind of give them some of the ways they can get in contact with you before we start back in on our last segment?
Sure. And love to hear from anyone and everyone. You can reach me in a number of ways. You can follow me on Twitter at E. Cronenfeld. Cronenfeld is K-R-O-N-E-N-F-E-L-D. You can certainly visit me on my webpage, which is ElliotCronenfeld.com. And Elliot has two L's and two T's in it. So either way, be happy to hear from anybody.
Excellent. So let's kind of jump right back in where we were. We've been talking about the challenges. We've been talking about things that people face, you know, the most common thing of getting normal, getting your own homophobia ready, if you're considering having children. So what's kind of the next steps that a lot of people step into as they go through this journey? And I know none of them are normal, but, you know, there's always some common threads.
There are common threads. And I think that part of the things that I can tell you is that, to first of all, understand what you really can take on and what you can't take on. And there's no right or wrong answer in how you become a parent. You know, because I have one child through adoption and one child through surrogacy, people always ask me which one was easier, which one was better. Neither is easier. Neither is better. Both of my children are loved, happy, well-adjusted. They both have their own unique challenges and problems. And we address them as their individual needs arise. I do think that the first thing you can do is to decide, you know, how you become a parent and what type of child you think you can manage is an important distinction. If you're going to go through adoption, do you think you can handle having a birth family involved in your child's life? Making decisions that if you were to go through surrogacy, what does it mean to have a known versus an anonymous donor? I would challenge you to think about not just for your comfort, but for the comfort and the meaning that your child will have as your child grows into an adult. In other words, think long term. Don't think about the process of how to have a baby. That's short-sighted. Really, what I'm saying is, what does your family look like when it's complete? Are you trying to have one child? Are you hoping to have multiple children? What does the role of biology mean to you? Because the role of biology will help you to make some decisions for yourself and for your child.
I think these are all really fantastic, just powerful things that I don't think most people even begin to think through. You know, I think the long term, you know, kids come into the world all different ways. And, you know, sometimes it's conscious decisions, sometimes it's not. But I love the piece about looking at what your family looks like for the long term, because just because this bundle of joy, if that's what you end up getting, is a true birth bundle of joy, is all cuddly, warm, and all that, and yes, you go through the sleepless nights, at some point that bundle of joy grows to a kindergartner, and then obviously to a middle schooler, and then a high schooler, and then a young adult in college, and then they start their own family. So there is this bigger picture, which none of us can ever predict what it's going to look like. But I think thinking ahead is so, so valuable in the advice that you've given. And as you were talking, one of the things that kind of came up for me was, so what happens when you find yourself working with a couple that they're kind of in opposite corners on this? How do you navigate that? And I know that's really putting you on the spot, but.
No, I think that's a really terrific question, Rick. The truth is that anyone who's in a couple knows that oftentimes in your relationship, you and your partner will be in very, very different spaces. That doesn't necessarily mean that you aren't making progress. I think that it's about determining which decisions you have to be in sync with and which ones is it okay to have a variance of opinion and which decisions can be put off for now. So, for example, the question is, if you're two men and you want to go through surrogacy And one of you is clear you want to be a biological father, and the other one isn't sure if you ever want to be a biological father. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for you as a couple, and what does that mean for how you represent your family to people outside of your household, your extended family, the community? And how do you, again, thinking long term, set up your path so that you have options later on down the road? So will you take your egg donation, split it, have both of you create embryos? And for the man who's not sure if he ever wants to be a biological father, he can then freeze his embryos so that if he decides he wants to move forward, he can then have biological half-siblings. But if he decides never to be a biological father, then his partner can use the rest of his embryos. It's about which decisions need to be made emergently and which ones just need to be kept on the table.
I think this is really an interesting space to be at in our conversation today, because these sort of discussions, and it's kind of interesting, this same topic to some degree came up on the Ricky Lake show the other day. I was asked, how would I recommend someone tell their spouse that they're gay? And I said, you do it like you would do any of your major conversations that you have as a couple. And if you can't have major conversations as a couple, then there's already a problem. But go to those big life conversations. Do we want to buy a house? Do we want to move in together? Do we want to, you know, have an open relationship versus a committed relationship? However you two have had these heavy conversations is probably the best way to have the conversation around starting a family, having children, provided that those conversations are productive. Otherwise, you kind of need to re-engineer and regroup on how to have a conversation around starting a family. So what do you think the biggest challenge for most couples is when they go through this process?
Truthfully, I think for a lot of couples, it's not the desire to have children or really figuring out the path forward. I think for a lot of couples, it's finances. I think for gay couples, becoming parents is a very, very expensive venture. If you're going to go through domestic adoption through the state, depending on what state you live in, most state adoptions through Department of Social Services or whatever that department is called in your home state tends to be a very low cost adoption.
Right.
There are a lot of social factors involved in that. Other than that form of adoption, all other forms of how to become a parent, private adoption, international adoption, gestational surrogacy, all have a very high price tag. And there are certainly some couples who can just write the check and move on, and that's wonderful. But for most couples, there's a lot of financial planning involved, and sure, it takes years to financially get the resources, I think.
All right. And I think this is where you bring two big life moments together, because we all know anybody who's lived in a couplehood knows that finances can be one of those tricky conversations to have, no matter how much money you make or who brings the bread home and who chooses not to. Those are going to be things that are going to start to show up too, that I know I've worked with a couple of couples who decided to cohabitate, and they happened to be, one was biological father, and then, okay, well, what about the kids? And, you know, in my own situation, how much of the weight do I carry? How much do I contribute to the home? These are where I think your advice, again, of looking to, you have to look to the long term here. What could happen? You know, how do all these things unfold? So we've got about 3 minutes left, Elliot, and I'd really like to just give you the opportunity to share any last pieces of advice that you would give anyone starting through this journey. What would be your top couple of things you would add to what you've already so beautifully shared?
A couple of quick things. First of all, we've talked a lot about gay couples. I think a lot of this holds true for gay singles as well. I think that if you really have a love and desire to be a parent as an openly gay, lesbian, transgendered person, then be a parent. There's so many options and ways that you can do it. Many people feel that they have to do it the right way. The right way is whatever way parenthood comes to you, and sometimes it's not the way that you have planned. It's how you will love and take care of your child. It's how you will raise that child to be a loving, responsible member of society and the connections that you make. It's what you represent to that child. So if you want to have a child, you want to be a parent, do it. But get advice, work with somebody who knows the ins and outs, and make sure you're thinking long term.
I think that's great advice. And I met someone, and maybe this story will end up taking the rest of the time. So if it does, I want to say thank you so much for being here. But I was in Provincetown, not far from where you were a couple of years ago, and met an artist who is a phenomenal guy. And he does these beautiful sculptures. And we were talking. He said, I so badly want to be a parent, but I get faced so often with the, you're single, you can't do it, and it costs a fortune. But as I listened to him tell his story, my heart was breaking, because this was a guy that I could tell could be a absolutely fabulous parent. So I'd have to agree with you, Elliot, that if you really desire this, then it's like anything else. Go for your dreams. Go for that desire that is well beyond what seems to be in reach, and really truly be yourself. So again, this is Rick Clemons, and I so enjoy having you on the show today, Elliot. Thank you again. Again, it's ElliotCronenfeld.com and Elliot Cronenfeld on Twitter. You can go to the show page today and you can hook up with him. Thank you so much again, Elliot. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Rick. It was my pleasure.
Great. So as we head into next week, we will be bringing back one of my favorite guests, Salvatore Sapienza. He was a brother in the Catholic Church, and he was on for the Coming Out Day. We're going to talk deeply about his experience being gay in the Catholic Church. And as always, I want to encourage every one of you to live your life, be yourself, be your truth, and never forget to constantly step out and step and step into living your powerful truth each and every moment of the day. We're only given this one lead. Have a great week, everyone. And I look forward to having you back next week on Coming Out Lounge. Take care.
Thank you for joining us today with the Coming Out Lounge with your host, Rick Clemons. Make sure you tune in with us next week, same time, same place, for the Coming Out Lounge.